The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
A firing in the NFL. Roger Stewart, if you mute my screen one more time as we're coming in from break. Raj, my producer, is in Los Angeles. And I'm on a Zoom. I have a computer in front of me with Zoom. And so I can see Raj's screen. And every day when we come in from break to introduce the show, Raj, the host or whatever it is, mutes it. So like a black screen appears above the letters. And I have to guess.
Well, why can't you mute yourself then so we don't have this problem every single day? How come you can't push the button?
Actually, I did. In fact, when you just told me to do that, I hit mute and it unmuted you. So I was already We have a firing in the NFL. Coach Doug Peterson, coach, I have been arguing for weeks and weeks. You got to bench Carson Wentz. Sit him down. Just like the Eagles did and Andy Reid did to McNabb. Donovan McNabb, much better quarterback than Carson Wentz once upon a time. Reid sat him down, and in that same season, McNabb led his team to his fifth NFC championship game. They held McNabb accountable, and it worked. What about Carson Wentz? Remember when I said sit him down? When you're working on ball security or making better decisions or not forcing the ball, you know, all week obviously is a point of emphasis with the coaching staff. And the guy comes out and makes all the same mistakes week after week and then stands up at post-game pressers talking about this is just the way we do things around here. And I told you over a year ago at this point what I've been hearing out of Philly, how Wentz has a lot of power in that organization. I mentioned a couple years ago, Joe Santoliquito, reporter out of Philadelphia, who wants the local team to do well, came out with some reporting a couple years ago talking about how Wentz means well. It was such the gentlest kind of kindest way to report on the Eagles in a way that's really meant to help the team. Wentz means well. He has a little bit of an in-your-face attitude about different issues, and in the locker room it's divided. They like Wentz and Foles, but Foles knows how to relate to the locker room a little better, and these guys are scared of Wentz. He has a lot of power in the organization. He has a direct line to Jeffrey Lurie, the owner. And instead of the reaction of the Eagles trying to silence the little guy, right, silence local reporters, because that's what they basically did, and then the organization going on as though Wentz can do no wrong. And then, by the way, enablers in the media saying, oh, yeah, great job, Carson Wentz. Stinking again. Right? What they could have done is said, oh, you know what? Yeah, Wentz is regressing. Let's do something about this. But they didn't. First, I'm going to play, like, you're going to hear from Coach in a moment. I have to say in a moment, or everybody jumps the gun and starts playing the sound. Just calm down, everyone. I'll reveal when you're going to hear this. I'm going to play for you, Coach, in a moment, saying why he sat Wentz down and played Hurts yesterday. And then I'm going to tell you why he actually did it. And then I'm going to tell you what he has to do now. Go ahead, Coach. Why'd you make the switch at quarterback?
I just felt like where we were as an offense, we needed a spark. You know, we needed something to kind of go our way. And so I decided to, put Jalen in the game.
Nah, that's not why. You know why Coach made the switch? Because last week, Dan Orlovsky on First Take, Dan Orlovsky of NFL Live fame on ESPN, on First Take, held up an L that his daughter, his adorable little daughter, drew. And he said, I got to hold this L on Carson Wentz. I'm not kidding. You think I'm kidding? I'm serious. When someone is known as the biggest apologist for a player, for a franchise, whatever, in the media, when they finally say, this guy's no good, that actually gives cover for the coach to make a move. I don't think it's just Orlovsky, but I think that actually gave Peterson cover he needed to sit this guy down. Wentz stinks. I mean, he stinks. And guess what? It's too late to fix him. I told you when to fix him. I told you all last year, fix him, fix him, fix him. No, he's an MVP candidate. This is ridiculous. He's awful. He's bad. He needs all these receivers are dropping balls and everyone's hurt. Okay, fine. So if they weren't, he'd be a middle-of-the-pack guy. But he's no good. And I saw the regression. I warned you of the trend, which direction it was pointing. And then this year it continued. Still apologies for him. Excuses. Even now, people are blaming the GM and the coach. Hey, how much power does the coach have if he can't pick his own staff? What can the coach do if the guy won't take coaching? As far as the GM, and I still think you should get rid of Doug Peterson. I think he thinks that his fortunes are tied to Wentz's. So instead of, by the way, that offensive line, fourth best run blocking in the league. Fourth best in the league. Give the ball to your stud back and your change of pace back. You got two guys who can get business done out of the backfield. Instead of just having Wentz try to dig himself out really when he's just digging himself deeper, right? And Peterson has done going for it on fourth and four from Seattle's 15. You know, he's made decisions that tell me I'm trying to get out of here. Meantime, Howie Roseman, who didn't use the second round pick to get DeAndre Hopkins. Oh, he's going to use it to bundle up in the draft and move up and go grab CeeDee Lamb. Didn't do that either. No. What does Roseman do? He uses it to draft Carson Wentz's replacement. That's what happened. I would get rid of Peterson. I would get rid of Roseman. Yes, I think you got to just tear this whole thing down. However, only reason I'd say don't get rid of Wentz is because you can't get rid of Wentz. It's $60 million dead cap money over the next 2 years. You can't cut him. You can't trade him. I told you trade him 2 months ago, right? See if Chicago will take him. And you get Foles back. Not because Foles can do anything with this team. Although, not only are the Eagles fourth run blocking, they have the 12th best win rate in pass protection on the offensive line. At any rate. So like, oh, Wentz doesn't have a line. Shut all the way up. Wentz has a very good offensive line, actually. Certainly a top 50% line. And when you look at all, you know, almost a top third offensive line in the league, he holds the ball too long. He has no pocket awareness. His mechanics are no good. His decision-making's awful. His internal clock is busted. He doesn't see the field. He doesn't trust what he does see. He's finished. Wentz will never be a good quarterback again. It's over. Too much has gone wrong, and he still thinks he's still like a pouty little petulant kid. Why don't you just say, yeah, coach benched me. I've been stinking. I got to get better.
Carson Wentz sucks, man.
Yeah. Who was that? Who said Carson Wentz sucks? I can't hear you, Roger. Anyway.
Remember we had a caller few weeks ago? It was like, Carson Wentz sucks, man.
Right.
This is weeks ago when you were still telling everyone.
Telling everyone then. Now, do you know why you have to sit Carson Wentz now? It has zero to do. Zero with fixing Carson Wentz. He is now unfixable. I told you when to fix him. No one wanted to listen. It's over. I told you when to trade him. You don't want to trade? It's over. You can't trade him. I told you why to sit him, to hold him accountable to the team. That's already done, too. You don't sit him down to fix Carson Wentz because you can't fix him. And you don't sit him down because Jalen Hurts gives you a better chance to win, though he might at this point. No. Has nothing to do with Hurts giving you a better chance to win. Has nothing to do with fixing Carson Wentz. You ready for this? You sit Carson Wentz for the rest of this season because my dying words. You sit Carson Wentz for the rest of this season because you got to see what you have in Jalen Hurts. You got to find out, and you got to find out now. You spent a second-round pick, even though you had a 27-year-old quarterback with a $100 million contract. 27! You spent a second-round pick because Roseman could read the writing on the wall. He could see Wentz wasn't getting any better. And he could see the coach was too scared to do anything about it. And even if he tried, Wentz wasn't taking it. Taking the coaching. So, you got to see what you have in that second-round pick. Because the Eagles going to have a top 5-6 pick this year. They're going to have a top pick this year. And you got to find out about Jalen Hurts right now to see whether or not you need to draft a quarterback this year. You understand? This is how serious it is. Forget Carson Wentz. Put him out of your mind. Eagles fans, forget it. And you know I'm right. Don't wish and chase. Don't throw bad money after good. or is it good money after bad? Don't do either one. You have to sit Carson Wentz down to find out about Hurts because you may need to use your draft pick on a quarterback. Meantime, that was straight talk wireless, no contract, no compromise. Meantime, my New York Football Giants. I've made a lot of fun of Dave Gettleman. A lot of fun of Dave Gettleman, the GM for the Giants. First of all, I hate his stupid Boston accent. That's right, you heard me, Boston. We are natural enemies, New York and Boston. That's just the way it is. Like the cobra and the mongoose. Or for most of New York-Boston sports history, more like the butcher blade and the meat. But anyway, we're natural enemies. And when I hear that Boston accent as the head coach of a New York football team, it makes me sick to my stomach. I hate the way he says quarterback. He says quarterback. Play that sound. Quarterback. Do we have that queued up? Oh, I can't take it. However, I have to admit this. And by the way, I love Saquon Barkley. You spent the second pick overall in the draft on a running back. Forget about the fact that he's not hurt now or that he's hurt now. You're not supposed to do that. And there's a reason you don't do that. You know, the best excuse for doing that is you never have to pay the guy, really. Because as soon as he's a rookie, like, you know, Saquon had over 2,000 yards from scrimmage as a rookie. They're as good as almost they'll ever be in certain respects as rookies. You don't have to take time really developing them. You juice them for the rookie contract. You franchise them once or twice. Then you give them a small contract. You say there's only 1 or 2 years left ahead of you. You know, the NFL incentivizes abusing running backs and exploiting them. And I think there should be an exemption, an exception for them in the CBA. They should get paid separately. Nevertheless, the way the rules are set up, that's why you draft in the first round. Because running backs are fungible. And I love Saquon. He has the chance to be he was the best prospect ever. Size, speed, everything. But you use the second pick in the draft on him. Then you reach for a quarterback sixth. Where you probably could have gotten him 17th. Or maybe in the second round. I mean, like, Daniel Jones is a day two guy. So he made a lot of mistakes. They made mistakes on the offensive line. But the point is, the Giants are the best team in the NFC East right now. It's a terrible division, but they're trending in the right direction. They have a very good defense. They win the battle up front. A lot of times, both sides of the ball nowadays. It's pretty good. Colt McCoy is a nice backup, league average backup, I would say. And Daniel Jones is just about a league average starter. That's pretty good. Joe Judge has been an excellent hire so far. When Joe Judge started, I thought, boy, he's doing all these hard-nosed coach stuff with the players and his own coaches, and that's not going to fly for a rookie head coach who wasn't even a coordinator. That's not going to fly. But he did it with character, I think. Best I can tell, his players really believe in him. He got them to buy in. And they only do that if they believe that the coach is putting them in the positions they need to be successful, right? So I got to give that to Joe Judge so far. The Belichick coaching tree, Joe Judge, Brian Flores, Mike Vrabel, suddenly all of a sudden, oh, look at this. They can coach a little bit, right? But here's what it's going to come down to with Joe Judge and really Gettleman. What is Daniel Jones next year? Forget about this season. If the Giants get to the playoffs, great. If they win somehow a playoff game, amazing. It's about next year and going forward. If Daniel Jones winds up a league average quarterback, then that rebuild by Gettleman is not good enough. It took you 3 years to give me a kind of an average NFL team. That's some BS. Do better. That's not good enough. However, if Daniel Jones is an above average quarterback, if he's like a B plus, at least maybe an A minus, like a star player, now the Giants have something. Because when Saquon comes back with an improved line, a really good defense, solid receivers, if unspectacular, you know, all of a sudden you can get some stuff done in the playoffs. It's a team built like a playoff team, even if it's a 9 or a 10 win team in the regular season, like, right? It comes down to what is Daniel Jones. Meantime, here's Joe Judge on the difference between the team now that they're playing well and a month ago when they were starting to trend. Coach, what's the difference?
It's not just those final 2 minutes. It's what'd you do the entire game to put yourself in position and capitalize on? What plays were you able to make earlier in the game that you got to go ahead and then execute down the stretch as well? You know, I just think our team's executing, you know, a lot better down the stretch. They've made a lot of improvement. A lot of that's from, you know, just comfort of being around these coaches for a length of time, you know, building on the you know, multiples that we have within the game plan on a weekly basis and the adjustments we can make on the sideline or in the locker room, you know, on a kind of quick turnaround basis.
Giants have won four in a row. This is a team that I thought might draft second or third. They won four in a row. And they were losing to Seattle by a really weird score, 5-0 at the half, right? And they came back and beat Seattle, and they beat them up front. That's really how they beat them. It's not easy to, like, Russell Wilson, if he needs to go out and score points, I know he hasn't done it recently, but he can, you want to go into, you know, if he's going to determine to score, it's very hard to stop Russell Wilson from scoring. But they did it. Meantime, I warned you about Bill Belichick. And forget about versus young quarterbacks, right? Oh, Bill Belichick versus a rookie quarterback. No. I warned you. Warren Sharp was all over this. Sharp Analytics. You're going to hear from him later in the show. I warned you about a coaching mismatch. Anthony Lynn's Chargers have figured out every which way to lose. And they're a talented team with a great young quarterback. And Lynn's just bad. He's not a good head coach. I'm sorry. I resisted saying it. And by the way, oh, because, bleeding heart or political correctness or something, right? Oh, yeah, that plays into it. I think that it's good. I even go back to years ago when Rush Limbaugh ran into controversy saying McNabb is overrated because the media is desirous of seeing a black quarterback succeed. I thought to myself, well, what's wrong with the media being desirous of that? It overcomes a pernicious stereotype. Why shouldn't good people want to see black quarterbacks succeed in a league where they were never given a chance, right? So, yeah, do I want to see black head coaches succeed? Yes, because you look around the league and you see a predominantly African-American league and almost no head coaches. Something's not right. So does that put pressure in a way on the media to be very patient with African-American head coaches? Maybe. Like how much race has an impact on the way we see the world is unknowable in a way, but it's present. But Anthony Lynn is just not good. He's not. And maybe he does some things well, but his management of situations at the end of games is really bad, and that's one of the reasons the Chargers lose close games. But going up against Bill Belichick, the greatest coach in the, by the way, arguably, and you may win the argument, in the history of American team sports. If you want to say, well, he cheated, so that takes away from it. You want to talk about what Red Auerbach used to do to teams? Right? Turning off the heat, turning on the heat, whatever he was in the locker room. He cheated in every which way. You know, like Billy Martin in baseball had Art Fowler teach everyone how to throw, how to doctor the ball. You know, like I'm not condoning cheating, and it does take away from Belichick's legacy. Nevertheless, this dude in this era of parity over a 20-year period has done what he's done even without Tom Brady, guys. Even without Brady. He won 10 games with Matt Cassel. They won 11 overall that year. They did miss the playoffs. 10 games with Matt Cassel. And right now, he has no defense. He has no offense. Nothing. He has a quarterback that had COVID this season who's coming off a catastrophic injury from another team who couldn't be more different than the quarterback he just had. And that quarterback got the quarterback he wanted to give the reins of the franchise to, got him sent out of town. So there's no continuity. And then even with that, the man is 6-6. He's pulling a Tomlin from last year, maybe even better because Pittsburgh had a lot of talent on the defense. How about this one? They're two plays away. Goal line stand in Seattle, strip of Cam Newton. See, you know, by the Bills. They're two plays away from being 8-4. 8-4, they'd be in the playoffs. So, yeah, Belichick-Anthony Lynn was a mismatch. I didn't know it was 45-0 mismatch. 45-0? Ooh. I think that, I mean, like, Anthony Lynn was going to lose his job anyway, but, I like, if he makes it to the end of the year, God bless him. More on that later with Warren Sharp. The Max Kellerman Show brought to you by Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline. You want to hear what the dumbest call Rex Ryan has ever seen was? That's coming up. I'll tell you it was if it was even the dumbest call of the season or the dumbest play of the season. It has competition.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
By the way, the Yankees are making DJ LeMahieu a priority in the offseason. For people who don't know, because listen, baseball's not popular on a national level at all anymore. Your national sports shows are basketball and football almost exclusively, and then a little bit of combat sports if it pops up, or you know, golf or something, you know, every now and then, something like that. But it's basically, why even call it sports? It's basically basketball and football, and not in that order. It's basically football and basketball. But I love baseball, and I love my New York Yankees. And DJ LeMahieu, who was a stud in Colorado. I mean, but was it in a ballpark effect that was happening? He's a great defender at second base. And he was an excellent defender at multiple infield positions, like anything but shortstop. Plays a nice first place, plays a good third base. And he hit for a high batting average, but not a ton of power. And in Colorado, you're like, oh, I don't know. Yankees sign him on the cheap to, like, fill in here and there. And he's immediately an all-star. I would say in Colorado, he had one great season, two really good seasons, and two other good seasons, you know, like that. He's been in the Yankees two seasons now, because this is an abbreviated season. Both great, both MVP caliber seasons. So he's now in a career with three great seasons, two really good ones, and a couple other good ones. He's a really good player. And really, overall, probably the best player on the team. And the Yankees somehow let him get to free agency, even though he signed a two-year, $12 million deal. Now they're going to have to pay top dollar. And what I'm not trying to hear is DJ LeMahieu not winding up on the Yankees because Hal Steinbrenner wants to save luxury tax money, like shut all the way up. Sign up LeMahieu, stop making excuses. And this is what happens, by the way. The Yankees were so hesitant to get an ace for so long, to really spend what it would have taken in prospects or in money. No Verlander, right? I mean, listen, they finally get the big stud ace pitcher at the top of the rotation, and it didn't work out this season because that's the nature of baseball. But they got to, you know, they got to stay with it, figure out shortstop, figure out catcher, Gary Sanchez and Gleyber Torres, whether they can, Sanchez doesn't look good to me, but Gleyber, whether he can stay at shortstop, I'm dubious, can really hit. But LeMahieu, LeMahieu's one of the best players in baseball. I'm not trying to hear any Yankees excuses. Sign him up. All right, now you can reach me at 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. The Max Kellerman Show, presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join me on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Speaking of New York sports, Rex Ryan, ESPN NFL analyst on Get Up, had this to say. Now, remember, Rex Ryan, his dad, Buddy Ryan, who was on Buddy Ryan's staff? Greg Williams. So Rex and Greg know each other. And if you listen to Rex Ryan talk about Greg Williams' ego, you can see there's no love lost there. Rex even said, I got a big ego. I know it, but this guy, like this guy's insufferable or whatever he said. So Rex, what do you think about Greg Williams' decision on 3rd and 10 at the end of a game where your defense just can't give up a touchdown, right? They can complete a pass. That's fine. You get a first down. It doesn't matter. You just can't give up a touchdown to bring seven, to leave three dudes out there to get beat in man coverage, right? And by the way, no safety help. And Mike Greenberg brought it up, by the way, on Get Up. Second consecutive, the previous play, they got behind the defense. You just can't have that happen. But what do you think about the final play call of Greg Williams, maybe of his NFL career, Rex?
dumbest call I've ever seen. And only been around the thing for 58 years, 30 years as a coach.
He can't be the
That's
dumbest.
The dumbest call ever. There's no other way of putting it. Look, and it's not like cover zero. There's a time and a place for cover zero. That thing sure ain't it. That's, I mean, it's just stupid. It's just absolutely stupid.
And by the way, Greeny brought up that they had a linebacker spying the quarterback. Like, they just didn't bring that. If you're going to bring the house, bring it. Listen, this was impossibly stupid, right? Of course. And it's arrogant. You know, I don't care what the situation is. These Jets players are in a position finally to win a single game this year, and the game is over. And because the defensive coordinator, who really has autonomy over the defense, because he wants to stick to what makes him him, right? Like he said, come on, man. I'm not even sure it was the dumbest play of the season. I think it was. I argue with Stephen A. It is. But, you know, that Falcons onside kick by the Cowboys, where the Falcons surround the ball and five guys all decide, all forget that it's an onside kick. They all seem to think it's a punt. Like, what? That cost Dan Quinn his job. Let's be honest. That's the thing that did it. And this cost Greg Williams his job. When you do something that, like, you know, but here's the difference. This is the reason this was the dumbest play of the season. I don't know ever, but the dumbest play of the season. It's the difference, like, in both cases, you killed the team, right? You killed your team in both cases. But one was manslaughter and one was murder. One was premeditated. The reason this is even dumber is the five guys on special teams for Atlanta, who all somehow caught, like, a stupid bug, right? Like, that was what's weird about it. If one or two guys makes a mental error, but how do all five guys make the same mental error? It's bizarre. I get it, but that's manslaughter. They killed their team's chances by accident. They didn't have time to consider what they were doing, really. Greg Williams, that's murder in the first degree. You killed your team's chances in the first. You looked, thought about it, and said, yep, we're doing this stupid thing. The only thing you can't do is what you did, and you win the game. By the way, when you're a defensive player on your own unit comes out and throws you under the bus, the head coach won't back you up, and the opposing quarterback thanks you for the play call. Here's my question, though, while we're talking about head coaches who didn't back him up. What was Adam Gase doing on the headset? What was he talking about? Who was he talking to? Why didn't he call a timeout? I don't get any, like, who, what are you preparing for coming up? It's 3rd and 10. He was shocked by the call, but he was distracted and didn't have time to get it together because he's talking on his headset. Who's more important in that moment than your defensive coordinator? And the play coming up. Gase will never survive after this season. Like, the question was, will he survive the season? The season's a lost cause, of course, long time ago. But Gase is gone, and he's awful. Greg Williams, you know, I never understood Bounty Gate. I don't understand why that's against the rules. Hey, not injure this guy. It's a full contact sport. It's a violent physical sport. Wearing a guy down is part of the game. If Greg Williams would have said, do something illegal to injure someone, absolutely. Fine him, suspend him, throw him out of the league. He didn't do that. As far as I know, Bounty Gate was just because he further incentivized his players to injure opposing players, but not necessarily outside the rules. That's part of football. When I used to watch LT put his shoulder pad in the small of a quarterback's back and the dude would go down like a wave, bones snapping and everything, I'd be like, ooh, LT, get him. Knock that quarterback out the game. You know, within the rules. When I watch a boxer go to the body and wear a guy down so he can knock him out later, it's the name of the game. Football is a war of attrition in some respects. So Bounty Gate, to me, is not a strike against him. Warren Sharp has brought up, however, lots of strikes against Greg Williams, who may now have ended his NFL career. And Warren Sharp will be on this show in a little while to break it down for you. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Drivers who save with Progressive save over $750 on average. Do I need to start giving a former number one pick some credit?
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
To get right down to it.
We got you covered.
Let me tell you what I think it means.
No doubt.
All right. All right, let's get this money.
Popular name.
I get money for this because it's nothing's on the line, but go ahead.
Listen, I brought this name up a few times, but take and listen to the headband, my man Baker Mayfield.
I'm listening.
All right.
Go ahead, Baker.
That's all right.
He's so quiet nowadays.
Yeah, he's supposed to have a swagger, but that's all right. No, well, all right. Well, he says, don't worry about it, but he says he has his Oklahoma swagger back. So, Max, now at 9-3, you, Max Kellerman, you've got to start giving Baker some credit.
Definitely give Baker some credit. No doubt. No doubt I'm giving Baker some credit.
No doubt.
Finally, I ran out of patience with the guy. I mean, I'm the one pointing out on First Take and on TV all the time and on this show. He's had four head coaches in just about two seasons, right?
Mm-hmm.
Think about that. Hugh Jackson, Greg Williams, Freddie Kitchens, and now Stefanski. This is like Alex Smith to start his career, and the offensive coordinators kept it. Four head coaches in 2 years? But at a certain point, I said, look, he's not that fast. He's not tall. He doesn't have a huge arm. He's not the most accurate quarterback in the world. What's he do above average? He's average. Mm. But I will say this. Most quarterbacks are dependent upon coaching. You know, for every Mahomes or Rodgers or Brady or someone like that, Deshaun Watson, Drew Brees, who would have been great no matter what, most quarterbacks, even the really good ones, they wouldn't have been really good without a certain coach, right? Like in the right situation. So Baker Mayfield has got an offensive line, a real running game, receivers. But you know what happened to him, Rog? I know I'm taking my time on this, but I think it deserves it. What happened to Baker, he got humble. He talks about he got his Oklahoma swagger back. Yes, but he got it through humility, ironically. What he said, I think to myself before I do something, men on the field, would an idiot do this? He said, and if the answer is yes, I don't do it, right? The NFL humbled Baker, and it allowed him to get his swagger back. How do you like that for irony? Go ahead.
All right, good, good. Glad you came around on it. There we go. All right, hey, Chicago, Matt Nagy is on the hot seat.
Yeah, I don't – no doubt he's on the hot seat.
No doubt.
But I don't know, hot. Look, they don't have an offensive line, period. That's it. That's the whole thing in Chicago. You want to know what the problem with Chicago is? They don't have an offensive line. Ask me what the problem with Chicago is. No offensive line. That's it. That's everything. If Chicago had an offensive line, like Nagy is less than perfect. Sure. Give Chicago an upper third offensive line. None of these conversations would be taking place. None of them. None of them. Because when they made the switch to Nick Foles, they would have won even more than they did. Right? Well, even more. They beat the Bucs. They'd have won some of those other games. And then if Foles gets hurt and Trubisky comes in, they'd still be winning. The problem is not Nagy. The problem is the O-line. What else?
All right. Hey, you're starting to worry about Kyler Murray and the Cardinals.
I say to this, nah, son, and no doubt.
No
doubt.
I'm not worried about Kyler Murray. I am worried about the Cardinals this season. That defense got to get better. Got to play
right,
better
real
defense.
Quick,
but
real
Kyler
quick,
Murray's
we talk
fine. Little... He'll be fine. Yep.
All right. You're not worried about the injury, though. Remember, there was a game he took a hit. He landed on his shoulder. Since
but,
then, that's what I'm
talking
about.
For this year? Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah,
for this
yeah.
season.
Okay.
For this season, they ain't going to make the playoffs the way they're trending. Yep.
All right. Real quick, Chargers must move on from Anthony Lynn.
No doubt. Anthony Lynn is no good. He just lost to Belichick 45-0. Switch teams, imagine. If Belichick could beat him 45-0 with this Patriots team, if you just switched rosters, Belichick would beat him 90-0. Because the Chargers have a way better roster than the Patriots. Way better.